Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's June 2nd, 2017, and it is time for Mickey Fulps' monthly major market review for May of 2017. And before we start off in our usual format, Mickey, we got to talk about really only two markets moved. We could just talk about these two markets and end it. Bitcoin, 79% up, and uranium, sadly, down 12%?
Yeah, something like that. And there's reasons for both of those, Kerry. and we'll talk about those in a bit. But your lead-in is apropos because at month's end, U.S. markets all ended up just off their highs that were all-time highs that were set sometime during the month. We had a spike downward on May 17th and all the markets, and I think that was when the Dems, and I spell that D-I-M-S, decided they were going to try to impeach Trump. Of course, that blew up quite quickly.
Comedian you are.
That, the real comedian. Had a very good time this
month. Oh, for sure.
The Dow finished 21,009, up only 0.3%, but the markets, you know, continue their march up that we've seen essentially this entire year. S&P 500, 2412, up well over 1% over the month. NASDAQ, 6199, up 2.5%. The only market that really bucked this trend in the U.S., the major market, would be the Russell 10,000 small cap index, and it finished off 2%, but at 1370 from its all-time high of 1400 a month ago. And what I've noticed is the Russell 2000 has basically been range-bound this entire year, Kerry, or actually going back to early December, between 1350 and 1400.
Which is interesting because it is the broadest indice or index, and NASDAQ, another broad one, has been overperforming. So go figure.
Yeah. Well, people are enamored with the tech stocks, and the NASDAQ, as you well know, is very tech dominated. Yeah. So I think that is part and parcel is what's going on with NASDAQ at this point.
Yeah, and it's dominated by Microsoft, Intel, and Facebook, and all those Google. Others, right? Google? Yeah. So, and Apple.
Which now has over, or sometime during the month, had over an $800 billion market cap. And that is equal to the GDP of countries like Chile and Poland. So, you know, second world countries for sure.
Yeah. Crazy.
What a topsy-turvy world that we actually live in, Gary.
Yeah, that's for sure. So moving right along with the markets, the TSX.
Yeah, TSX did not have a good month. I think we can probably attribute that to the decline in oil. It's very energy and mineral dominated. Finished the month down 1.5% at 15,350. The Toronto Venture Exchange continues to be in very early, late spring and early summer to late spring doldrums. The sell in May, go away phenomena is not really happened that much because we've had very low volumes, but we find basically no interest in this market right now. It's a bunch of pro investors trading stocks around, I think. Finished at 800, down almost 1% over the month. One of the things that's been hanging over both the TSX and the TSXV is a rebalancing of the junior gold miner index, which is scheduled to come mid-month here. And it's really shook up some of the advanced explorers, small miners, even the mid-tier miners, as this index and ETF incestuously owned by the same company, VanEck, rebalances.
Right.
Meanwhile, the emerging market index finished a two-year high, over 1,000, finished 1,005, up almost 3%. We haven't seen it above 1,000 since exactly 2 years ago, Kerry.
That's pretty remarkable. And we should connect that connect the dots here with the dollar, because what's happened to the dollar in the past 3 months, it's declined. We hadn't seen a three consecutive month decline. God, I can't even, well, back since 2016, first quarter. So I wonder if it's a pattern emerging.
Yeah, very, very weak dollar. You know, that's part of Trump's platform. Makes a lot of sense to have a weaker dollar. Bear in mind, though, that, you know, the dollar was stuck around 80, 2.5, approaching 3 years ago before it started moving up. So this is still a relatively high value for DXY. Closed the month at 97. We should also mention, Kerry, that the VIX, the volatility index, often called fear index for the S&P 500, hit a 24-year low mid-month. It went below 10, finished the month at 10.41. Essentially, there is no volatility in the S&P 500. We did have one or two days around that day on May 17th when all this impeachment noise came about, and it spiked 15 or 16 that day, and it fell back off. So no volatility in the market. U.S. dollar at a seven-month low, a low that we have not seen at 97 since a week before the election. Actually, I'll stand corrected there. That's a seven-month low dating back into late September, early October. Part of that might have to do with the strength of the euro, strength of the Swiss franc, and some of that, of course, was driven by the election of Macron in France, defeated the so-called far-right candidate. I don't think she was that far-right, Le Pen, but that's the way the media spun it. And that was very positive for the euro. Moving on to bonds, interest rate at 2.21 for a 3.5% loss over the month. This is the low interest rate on 10-year treasuries since the Trump election. And I would say this is despite what is certain, I'm pretty certain to be a rate hike here, 0.25% rate hike coming up in mid-June by the Fed. The market appears to have already baked that in. And then Bitcoin, I'll let you wax poetic a bit about Bitcoin, and then I'll chime in with my opinion, Kerry.
Yeah, well, it's a market that went up 76.4% during the month. That's on the heels of a 22% increase in April. And like we were talking about, parabolic, really exponential move, but parabolic is the other end of exponential when it goes down. And markets, I've never seen a market go parabolic or go exponential that didn't wind up crashing shortly thereafter. It just has to happen.
Absolutely, Kerry. I mean, that's the way markets work. I think that probably Jesse Livermore was one of the first guys to point this out in, 1907. But yeah, you've nailed it. Any market that goes exponential will have that parabolic pattern where it comes screaming down the other side. Some people, the blockchain aficionados are saying this is revolutionary and will change the way the world does business. There are people like you and I that are certain it will go parabolic. We don't know quite when, but some of the pundits are comparing it to the dot-com bubble of 2000. And really, I did a little bit of research on it, and a lot of the trade right now is dominated in Bitcoin. The Bitcoin trade is dominated by Chinese speculators. So, and that's generally what happens when markets go exponential. The speculators are running amok.
Yeah, well, you know, the culture is a gambling culture. I mean, many of them. Care. Yeah, you see them in the casinos, and a normal person, if they got $100,000, they're $100,000 ahead, they'll just cash out normally. I've seen Chinese, like, just double down on it because they're going to break the bank. And this is just another way for the Chinese to gamble. I think there are valid aspects to the cryptocurrencies, but I don't think we're in a position to actually judge value at this point because it's so new. look, 95% of the world had never even heard of Bitcoin, don't understand it, don't know what to do. I wrote an article on Financial Survival Network talking about the key aspects of money. Bitcoin is not yet money, right? It is a medium of exchange, but it's not universally accepted by any stretch. When was the last time somebody paid you in Bitcoin, Mickey? And it's got issues. And
well, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And it may not end up being the cryptocurrency or the blockchain technology of choice. I mean, this is the time. And in that way, it would be similar when it does go parabolic to the dot-com bubble, in the fact that you, at some point, you have a very few winners and a whole hell of a lot of losers. We see the same thing in my business, in the Toronto Venture Exchange. When it goes parabolic, there's big washouts and companies fail. And at some point, that's going to come. We just don't know when.
Yes. And that's it. We don't know when, but it's predictable, just like night follows day, just like the seasons of the year. These markets are totally predictable. And when it hits, when it does crash, it'll go down by 2/3, maybe as high as 80%, almost as fast as it went up.
And it generally takes a long time for these markets to recover. I mean, it's probably not exactly fair to compare it to the dot-com bubble, but the NASDAQ hit its all-time high, I think just over 5,000 or just under 5,000 way back at the in year 2000. And it took it another 16 years to get back up there. So.
Yeah, that's for sure. And this time it's different. Okay. This time is different.
This time is different, Kerry.
Right.
For sure.
Absolutely. So, but one thing that isn't different, we look at our metals, a very lackluster month there, huh?
Well, there was some volatility within the month, but overall, the metals were basically flat month over month, let's say. Price of gold, 1268, finished in April at 1268. But it did dip as low as 1218 on May the 10th, so it's up $50 since May the 10th. Similar thing pattern for silver. Hit an intra-month low of 1616, but it closed at 1730. So if you go back and look, it had been since the early part of 2017 since it was approached that $16 range. Right. Flat briefly below 900, rallied quite strongly from that, finished at 947, 0.3%. And the contrarian in all the so-called precious metals for a number of months now, we've noticed, has been palladium. It dropped 1.1%. It actually took quite a dive in the early part of the month, as low as 756, but finished on a high of 818. So, and then copper, not a good month for copper, kind of a blah month. It ranged from 248 to 261, closed toward the top end of that at 257, lost 2 cents over the month. I think part of this flat month, if you will, or unexciting month for the speculators in copper has a lot to do with seasonality. Everybody ramped up their copper buys in quarter and into the second quarter. Now we are in heavy construction season in North America, in, let's say, the Northern Hemisphere. And so the buying of copper, most people have their inventories, which will take them through the construction season.
Right. So seasonal factors affecting it. And we look at the energy sector down, but not out. Slightly down
and up and down and up over the month. OPEC came out with a 9-month extension here about a week ago on their production cuts, but it wasn't enough for the market. The specs had figured bet very strongly, long on oils, that this extension would be more than that. It would be more a stronger production cuts, and they were disappointed with that, and they bailed last week. Anyway, oil went from below 46 to greater than 51 bucks during the month. Finished about in the middle of that at 48.31 for a 2% decline. Brent had a 2.7% decline, finished at 50.31. The real news here, if you will, and I don't really think it is news, but the markets are, oil markets are a bit spooked because U.S. shale just keeps rolling right along. Gary, by month's end, we had 900 rigs. Wow. Turning to the right, most of those in shale basin U.S. Year over year, that is greater than 500 rigs added to explore for oil, develop oil. That's significant, and it's really driven by U.S. shale. We know that U.S. shale won this battle amongst the big oil producers in the world, and will continue. Netbacks can be generated somewhere around $25 a barrel all in cost now. So,
right.
Henry Hub, low seasonal demand, was off 6%, closed at 307 for the month. And then we mentioned the fall in uranium, down almost 13%, fell below 20 bucks again, actually hit $19 for a day or two last week, finished at 1975. And the reason for that is very well defined. It was a Japanese trader came in once again and dumped some uranium on a very light volume spot market. They keep selling stockpiles as the delays and restarts of Japanese reactors continue.
Amazing. Just when you think it can't get any worse, right?
Well, and we know that it's going to get better. We just don't know when it is. Uranium is a commodity that can move up, up, up and away very quickly. U.S. utilities have not entered into the market at this point, and the piper will have to be paid because they're depleting their stockpiles. Generally, they keep 2 to 3 years of demand right then and there, ready to go when they get, and that those stockpiles are getting quite low. So we don't know when it's going to happen. We don't know who will dump uranium on the market when the price starts to rise. But bear in mind, when it starts and when it's set and really when it's on the go, uranium prices can skyrocket. We've seen that happen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's just when it's ready, it's like any other commodity, right?
Yeah, and in that regard, I'm going to do a little self-promotion here. I'm going to be speaking in New York City on Tuesday and Wednesday at the One-to-One Investment Conference, and my subject is uranium. So I'm going to talk about supply-demand fundamentals and I think for, and it's restricted to qualified investors only, but it's free. So anybody that's a qualified investor, private, buy side, sell side, whatever, in the New York, greater New York area, come by and attend this conference. There'll be 40 or 50 companies and quite an interesting setup there.
All right. Well, that's
information available on my website.
All right, so just go over to mercenarygeologist.com, and you can get the info there. And sounds like it's going to be an interesting talk. So, all right, so uranium, and then ratios, nothing much to talk about there, huh?
Well, no, not a lot of movement over the month. I would, we can point out the gold-silver ratio has stuck around the mid, low 70s here for a couple of months. I want to talk a little bit about the platinum gold ratio, still at historic lows, 0.75. And the platinum to palladium rate actually went up a couple of ticks at 1.16. Read an interesting article yesterday, I guess, about the platinum palladium ratio and how some people, some pundits are predicting parity of those to come. And the guy that wrote this, and I think it was, yeah, he was with Bullion Ball. So He pointed out, Carrie, that if platinum is the same price as palladium, that will result in significantly increased demand for platinum because it is the best catalyst in gasoline powered internal combustion engines.
Yes.
So most of the substitution that has come about over the last 20 years of palladium for platinum in gasoline engine autocatalysts is simply because platinum's been expensive. It is the better catalyst, though. So if those prices continue to work toward parity, you're going to see people moving to platinum at the expense of palladium. So there you go. That that will certainly eventually result in a rise of the price of platinum.
Well, you know, it's pretty remarkable to see it go for this amount of time below gold. And it's some kind of record since we've been following it anyway.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So something's got to give, and it will give. It's not, these markets are so small. Palladium, platinum, those markets, publicly traded markets, are tiny. They're a fraction of the size of gold and even silver. So slight disruptions.
Yeah, something very small. And the amount of production in a given year is very small, too. Somewhere the world produces somewhere between 6 and 7 million ounces a year of these metals, and compare that to the gold market, which we produced what was it last year, about
a couple thousand tons.
Yeah, so about 85 to 90 million ounces. So from that point of view, these are very tiny demand markets.
Yeah. And that means there can be big moves really fast on minor news. So
yeah, and also, you know, I mean, the platinum is something 75 to 80% of the world's platinum comes out of South Africa, and for palladium, something on the order of 40% comes out of South Africa, and 40% comes out of Russia. So, you know, both those places have geopolitical considerations.
Absolutely. Well, I think that about does it for this month. And I think there's some numbers in here that definitely bear watching, especially the gold to silver ratio.
And especially Bitcoin's going to be quite
Bitcoin fireworks, for sure. It's coming. Mark my word. It will definitely have its moment. And not to say that cryptocurrencies aren't viable for the future, because they are, but it's so immature, it's so ill-defined, the market, and now it's become a gambling surrogate for the Chinese, and I guess they're having trouble getting to the casino, so Bitcoin's the next best thing, Mickey. Right?
Very well put.
Hey, and yeah, so make sure you check out Mickey's site, mercenarygeologist.com. Check out his event in New York coming up. You definitely want to see it if you can. And Mickey, where else do we find you? Twitter and your other...
At Mercenary Geo, we're almost at 61,000 Twitter followers.
All right. And check us out at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Got a question for Mickey or myself? Email kl@carrylutz.com. The Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Mickey, we will talk to you next month, where we will do the same thing all over again, and we'll see where Bitcoin's at.
Yeah, we sure will. Good to talk to you, Gary. I look forward to it.